You're listening to The Space Show with Andrew Rennie on 88.3 Southern FM. One of the decisions to come out of American President George W. Bush's administration was the cancellation of the aging space shuttle program. His Moon, Mars and Beyond policy set the Moon as an intermediate goal and Mars as a full destination for human spaceflight. NASA set in place a project called Constellation to achieve those goals. However, Congress did not fund Constellation to the extent that would be needed for it to achieve its aims by the initially intended dates. By the middle of 2008, it was obvious to all except NASA propagandists that there would be a very long gap between the closure of the space shuttle program in late 2010 and the first flights of the Constellation Project's Orion capsule in 2020. This date, 2020, said the pessimists, was as optimistic as NASA's officially voiced 2018. In the United States radio, television, and blogosphere, they went ballistic, demanding some magic cure, such as extending the space shuttle program or accelerating Constellation. Now, here's a sample rant which was aired on the United States Space Policy, broadcast on 2008, November the 11th. It's titled Final Cut.
Have you ever met those people who like the sound of their own voice? Well, you have now. We're only, like, slightly better than those people who like reading their own words. Or worse. Take your pick. Okay, welcome back to the McKenzie Show. The word of the day is sticky, because that's what my jasmine rice was today when I overbrothed it. Still good, though. Topic of the day has to do with the space station. It's kind of a two-part topic. The first part, the second part now, was whether or not you'd want to live on the space station. Well, in researching all the space station issues, I came across some of the more forefront issues with regard to the space station. Someone mentioned to me, you know, some weeks ago, that the U.S. space program was now defunct. Okay. Since I had seen no such articles flashing across my BlackBerry or my internet, I said, let me check this out, okay? I'm interested in space, much as the next girl. Actually, I'm a little bit more than the next girl because I'm so into sci-fi. But here's the thing. I'm reading all these articles, and sure enough, the U.S. space program is now defunct. Now, you have to ask yourself, why is that? Now, you guys may know if you've done the research or if you just happen to pick up the Washington Post or any of the other papers that have talked in depth about it. I guess I didn't. So now I know. Here's where we are. Okay. 4 years ago, in 2004, the Bush administration simply said to NASA, you know what, you guys, the equipment is bad. Well, let's go back even further than the Bush administration. NASA has known for some time that their equipment is bad. Their spacecraft is bad. The stuff is so old, it's falling apart, it's just not safe for anyone. So they've been asking for money to upgrade their equipment, to build and to purchase new spacecraft, and essentially to make everything safer for everybody. All right? One way that can happen is to give us more money. We'll continue doing what we're doing, and we have more money in the budget, we'll purchase new spacecraft. Or what we can do is we can mandate that the space program that the United States has to upgrade its equipment, and no one can utilize the old equipment, therefore forcing NASA and forcing the powers that be, forcing everyone within the whole community of astronauts and everybody that's, you know, ancillary to that to upgrade, and everybody would know. So this is what happens. They apparently have been stonewalling NASA's request for more funding and the U.S. space program's request for more funding for years, people. Years, okay? At least according to what the papers say, the limited research that I've done, and you guys can do more. Share your thoughts. But here's what they say to me is that essentially NASA's been asking. Everybody agrees that the U.S. space program needs to upgrade its equipment. It's old. People could die. We all agree, okay? Democrat, Republican, it doesn't even matter. Everybody agrees. Everybody knows it takes money to do that, right? Okay. NASA's asking for money. Congress and the Bush administration are essentially saying no. Here's where we are. 2004, or they're saying essentially, no, not right now. We'll do it later. Do it the best that you can. Upgrade the equipment, retrofit, put some patches and some band-aids on there, fix it as best you can, and we'll get to you guys later. Well, we haven't gotten to them later because the Iraq war came along and we're sending billions of dollars there. Now, here's where we are. 2004, Bush's second term. Bush comes in and says, you know what? Tired of all this. What you guys are going to do is you have to upgrade your equipment. So essentially, from what I read, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm not stating this right, but from what I read, I understand that the Bush administration essentially mandated to NASA and for the U.S. space program that it is required that within 5 years, they must upgrade all of their equipment. So in other words, they have their space program under the name that it is now. And the new program with the new spacecraft and all the new equipment would be called the Constellation Program. All right, or some sort of derivative of that. Here we are. Bush comes in and says, you know what? I've heard you. You will not send up any more spacecraft in those old, old machines. You will not send people up in those. You will not utilize those. Those are unsafe. We totally agree on that. Shutting down the old program because it's unsafe. Now, what are we going to do to replace that? Bush doesn't say, oh, you guys can't have a space program. Oh, America, I'm shutting down the old space program. What he says is simply, you may not go up in the old ships, okay? For the next 5 years, you guys may not utilize the old ships. You have to transfer over, purchase new spacecraft, get together or cobble together a new space program with safer equipment, all right? By the way, NASA, we're not increasing your budget. Okay, so figure that one out. In the next 5 years or so, I don't know how you're doing it, but I tell you, as of blank date, he said in 2004, he said that in 5 years, they had to terminate the old space program, and he refused to increase their budget. So that means as of 2004, NASA's scrambling for this whole U.S. space program. They have the same budget they've always had every year, and they have to buy new spacecraft, new equipment, all new stuff just to make their people safe, because they know that as of 2009, that's like the dead end date, termination of the United States space program as we know it, unless they better have something new as of 2009, because no ship is leaving the air as of 2009, because that program is terminated. It's not allowed. In 2009, you're done, NASA. You may not send anything else up unless it's something new, brand spanking new under this Constellation program. Okay, this is the predicament that NASA finds itself in. Okay, we all know that. Here's where we are today. Fast forward, Bush is leaving office. It's wonderful, right? And you're like, oh, whatever. It's been nice. It's been 8 years. It doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat. Whatever. Bush has served 8 years. He's done his time. He did what he had to do for the country. He's done it. He's over. He's going to do whatever he does after he's done with his presidency. He's leaving. None of this matters to him anymore. But where we are now is here Obama comes in and you have this program. This space program that's terminated. Why am I bringing this up? I could care less. I don't even want to get into election issues. I don't even want to get into Republican, Democrat. I don't even want to get into this stuff. We talked about it. We did it. It's over. It's done. But I read something online, some blog or some article where these crazy people were ranting on about how it was Obama's fault that the U.S. had no space program. Number one, I want to say to you people, in 2004, I'm going to do the research, and I'll tell you guys next time, was Obama even a senator? Now, that's my bad if I'm so stupid that I don't know if he was a senator or not. You know what? Probably. I didn't pay attention. I really honestly didn't pay that much attention. I don't have the date. Was he a senator in 2004? Okay. One thing we do know is that George Bush was the president in 2004. He was elected the president, and from what I understand, the Bush administration made this decision. So granted, all of this comes to fruition. It rises up. It materializes. All the negative materializes 4 years later, 5 years later, because Bush said in 2004, in 5 years, that's the last space flight that you're going to have. Essentially, what the man did was set it up that the next president that comes in has a terminated space program, whether it was a Republican or Democrat. Even if it was McCain, people were going to say, McCain, you have terminated the space program, because the president did it. Essentially, the president has a dysfunctional space program, one that is terminated. It wouldn't even matter if it was McCain or Obama. Both of them would be blamed. Here it is. We have a president or president-elect who's being blamed because the space program is terminated, but really it was George Bush who did it. All right. Now, where we are today, beyond the president, there is no space program as of 2009 in the United States, because NASA doesn't have the funding to purchase new spacecraft relatively soon. So 5 years has gone by and they don't have the money. They're still operating their old stuff. They don't really have the money to buy new stuff. And they're basically I hate to use this term, out of luck, okay? They need money, and they're out of luck. So really what they're going to do is sit on their hands for the next however many years until they can amass the funds to purchase a new spacecraft. Actually, they're not even going to do that, because if you read the article that I'm going to post below this this whole little chat, I'm going to post a New York Times article that shares with you the fact that the United States is going to be purchasing seats on Russian spacecraft. Okay, here we are, people, years after the Cold War, no more Soviet Union, and we are purchasing seats on Russian spacecraft. Okay, these were the people that we were in the race to the moon with. Okay, these are our adversaries, in the sense that we are competing with these people. Now, granted, we're working together on the International Space Station. Wonderful, wonderful international love fest. We're happy about that. That's nothing bad. And by no means is this meant to be a negative for the Russians. By no means. I could care less. God bless them. But here's the point that I'm trying to make. You know, even if it was friendly competition, it's competition, and we're purchasing seats on it. I mean, how low is that? Talk about humility. Talk about having to humble yourself to your competition. You've got to go to them and ask them if you can utilize their seats. China is now having a space program. China's going to be to the moon again before us. And there's a huge brouhaha about the fact that China is going to set foot on the moon before we go back up, because we can't afford to do it. Our spacecraft is unsafe. And China will touch the moon before we ever touch it again. How shameful and humiliating is that? When we are one of the premier countries in the globe, we can't even afford to get ourselves to the moon. Shame on us. I feel bad. And I felt that I needed to share that with you. Now, do we really want to put ourselves in a predicament where we make Russia mad? Okay, it's an international space station, but I guarantee you, we make Russia mad enough, there's not going to be one American touching foot to that international space station, because guess what? We're going to find out they don't have any seats. We're going to go to purchase seats for our astronauts on a space station, and they're not going to have any. All right, you want to talk something even crazier? Most of the shuttles that they put up there, they're hooking on to the space station, they're not necessarily American-made. They're from Japan, they're from China, they're from Russia. They're not from America. So a lot of the stuff that's going on the International Space Station, the additional living quarters and the things that they're the add-ons and all that kind of stuff, they're not even made in America. Like, Japan is making them. Russia's making them. Well, Russia's made them now. We may have a few on there, but it's not like we're not the most premier, cutting-edge people. So we're behind the eight ball on this whole space program thing. And we better not make Russia mad. Because we may find that they're all sold out. You ever been in that predicament before? You need that guy that you upset and find that he's all sold out? That's what's going to happen to America. And you know what? I don't want to hear somebody coming to me and saying, you know what? It was Barack Obama that did it. It was Barack Obama. No, it was George Bush that waited so late in the game and then turned around and set up this whole space program in 5 years, that after he was the president, he essentially set it up so that whoever came after him had a disaster, a public relations nightmare, loss of jobs by the thousands for NASA, okay? They can't even afford to pay these people, because what's the point of paying them to sit at home, all right? Shut down for America. We're sending money to the Russian economy, which, hey, maybe that's what God wanted. Maybe that's what God wanted. What can we say to that? This is where we find ourselves. And now if Obama doesn't turn around and give NASA humongous dollars, okay, mucho grande dollars, then he's the bad guy. I resent George Bush for doing that. That's kind of like low. That's pretty low, I think. What do you guys think? All right, we've ran really, really long, actually additional 6 minutes over, because I was ranting, as you know. We'll talk more about the lighter side of space travel tomorrow, whether or not you'd want to live on the space station and some of the pros and cons. Thanks so much for listening. Again, it's The McKenzie Show. Peace out.
And you're listening to The Space Show on 88.3 Southern FM, where we're looking at President Obama's space policy. Now, that was a rant that was heard on the United States radio. And the event that I went to last year, at the Kennedy Space Center with President Obama was in response to that sort of thing and lots of other things that were happening. So that when Barack Obama assumed office, he was faced with the mess left behind by President Bush. He commissioned a review of the United States manned space program to be led by Norm Augustine. His committee recommended cancellation of Constellation and far-reaching changes in the nation's space program. We heard of some of those changes on last week's show 2 weeks ago. To explain his new policy, President Obama called together the movers and shakers of the American space program at the Kennedy Space Center. I was one of only two Australians there. The other was astronaut Andy Thomas. Just minutes before the president spoke, I caught up with some of the invited experts. One of them was Neil Tyson. He's the director of the Hayden Planetarium, and he may be familiar to some Southern FM listeners because he's been seen on SBS television as a presenter of several television documentaries about astronomy. He'll also be familiar to regular Space Show listeners because he was a member of the Moon, Mars and Beyond Commission. Here's how my conversation with him went.
And understands the role that NASA plays in who and what we are as a nation and what kind of ambitions we would have economically, intellectually, even culturally. That's what I'm bringing to this. So if I can get you back to Earth. But that point of view is not really what this is about.
No,
it's about how to cut up the pie.
Yeah.
How to distribute within the pie that you're handed.
That's right.
I want a bigger pie.
I want a bigger slice of a pie.
Well, the question then is, why aren't you going to get one? Is it because people don't understand what role NASA actually plays in their life? Because I don't believe they do. And if they did, I think we wouldn't be having this conversation. We wouldn't even need this meeting here. That's what I think.
Okay.
I've seen many of his YouTube.
No, there's one he didn't see.
I've seen many of Neil's.
Not the one. There's one in particular she's talking about.
Oh, is that the one that
viral at NASA?
Came out 10 days ago. You didn't see that one. See this guy. Let me talk to you.
Forget this. I'm immune from viral stuff.
Should the American public be excited about this program, and if so, why?
As I led off before you walked up. My concern is not so much enthusiasm for one program or another. I come at this more from a cosmic perspective. And in that perspective, I look at our nation, I look at the fact that the rest of the world is basically passing us by. Our infrastructure is crumbling, rusting. We've forgotten how to dream about tomorrow. And I ask myself, what are we missing? What force driver should be there that is not? And I keep coming back to NASA every time I try to imagine a future of America that is technologically, scientifically competitive with what is happening in the rest of the world. And it's not simply about investing in science, because you need people who have ambitions to do the science in the first place. Where are those ambitions forged? Every time I study that problem, I end up back at NASA, watching NASA as a force of nature unto itself, operating on the educational pipeline. That's what I find myself revealing about what role NASA can play on the future of this nation. And the extent to which people don't know that, or don't understand it, or don't see it, is the extent to which we proceed forward into the future at our own peril, economic peril. And it's not about spin-offs. Yeah, we can list the spin-offs. I can say, next time you get your LASIK surgery, do I hear a thank you, NASA? No, I haven't heard that lately. You're using your cordless power tools. Do I hear a thank you, NASA? No, why don't I? Okay? Yeah, we can talk spin-offs. And we can spend all day listing the spin-offs. And NASA publishes a volume of spin-offs every year. This comes out, okay? But that's not even what this is about. It's about energizing a nation to get excited about what it is to dream about tomorrow again. When we all grew up, at what age are we? When we all grew up, how long did you have to wait? Maybe a week before a magazine article talked about the city of tomorrow, the car of tomorrow, the home of tomorrow? Everyone was thinking about tomorrow. You go to people today, they don't think about tomorrow. The dream is not there. There's no sense of a future that will be fundamentally different from the life you're leading today. And I submit to you that NASA is the force that enables that cultural ambition to think about tomorrow. And I'm a scientist. I come to you this as a scientist. So I love me some robots. Don't get me wrong. Okay? Love the robots. But nobody names high schools after robots. Nobody gives ticker tape parades to robots. And when scientists are on the front, when
I went to Kiva High School. I don't know.
when explorers are on the frontier, this is what galvanizes the energy of a nation. We would not be the first for that to be true. The history of our species coming out of the cave is one of the celebration of those who crossed the valley, who went over the mountain, who discovered new lands. Those are the people to whom we build statues. Where is that era? It's sitting right in front of us. Some people are blind to it. Not only that, once you stimulate an entire generation of scientists, engineers, and technologists, and mathematicians, the STEM fields, these are the people who invent things. These are the people who create, who have ideas and patents and whole industries issue forth from the creativity of that community. And we've known this since the Industrial Revolution. The nations that embraced the investments in Industrial Revolution, the nations that have embraced innovations in science and technology, which led to the Industrial Revolution and continues, those nations led the world.
So getting back to this Earth.
They've led the world.
Getting back to this planet.
Mm-hmm. So my position here is the public needs to understand. And by public, I mean, well, the public votes congressmen, and we all vote a president. The public needs to understand what NASA is to them, not only as an individual, but to the country they live in. And to the extent that they don't understand that is a failure of us all. Because I'm tired of arguing how to split up the pennies that NASA gets. There's something wrong there. While the rest of the world somehow understands what role space is going to play in their future, China just talked about building a space station. England just got together, coordinated their offices to make a new space agency. So somehow we don't understand that. And I think we've been coasting. We've been coasting for 40 years.
And so do you think this is about to change, or is it going to get worse?
I don't know. That's why I'm here. I can't predict this future. I'm here to find out. I'm here
afterwards,
to...
Afterwards, come tell us what you think.
So that's what that is. That's where we're going there.
Tom Halverson of Florida Today. And
oh, okay.
Today.
Love you guys down in Florida Today.
Hey, I always love hearing you talk.
Okay.
Come
thanks.
Back over afterwards.
I will see.
Yes,
depends afterwards. On what the forces
let's
are.
Let's
but,
hear.
Yeah.
We'll have
okay.
some gravity force over here.
Gravity works.
That was Neil Tyson. As I said, Neil Tyson there, and his views on very controversial views there on what America should do in space. Well, as I looked around, I next spotted Buzz Aldrin, who, with Neil Armstrong, made the first human landing on the moon. Earlier, he had worked out the mathematics and techniques for the rendezvous of two spacecraft in space, something he was able to personally put to test not only in his Apollo 11 lunar mission, but also on Gemini 12. He was able to skillfully dock with an Agena target on only the third orbit. His nickname in NASA was Mr. Rendezvous. Well, soon after I began to chat with Buzz Aldrin, other reporters saw me and tried to jostle me out of the way. However, I was able to hold my place only centimetres from him.
The vision for space exploration arose out of the Columbia accident board because we were down to three. And it appeared in early 2004 that we should retire the orbiter because we should be able to expect to have an appropriate substitute between Sputnik and the moon. There was no gap. the people were smart enough to take the Mercury with one guy and the complex Apollo, however it was going to get to the moon, which was eventually by specialized spacecraft. That's the strategy that won Apollo. Not necessarily lunar orbit rendezvous. It was a very essential ingredient, but it was specialized spacecraft. A translunar, Earth to Moon, and then a Moon spacecraft. Okay? Now, so we put in the Gemini program, and it paved the way. There was no gap in Apollo, even though we lost the crew of Apollo 1.
Yeah.
We did keep moving, and we flew very significant components of Apollo and Skylab, probably one of the most underestimated programs, because it really pioneered a large volume with one launch, not a lot of launches.
Yeah.
And then we flew a mission with the Russians. Did it solve the Cold War? Not really. Did Apollo solve the Cold War? You bet. Why? Because we beat the Russians. That was the purpose. If we could beat the Russians to the moon, we could certainly beat the Russians to missile defense, despite you people trivializing it by calling it Star Wars. Okay? There was no gap. All right, after Apollo, what happened? We went almost 6 years with a gap. That should never happen. Transition from one program to another is very difficult. But in 2004, it looked like we could do it. What was a key ingredient that determined what we did? The recommendations from the accident board, which said, separate crew and cargo. Fine. But then it said, on the launch vehicle, which opened the door to something that I did not approve of at all, which was a study done by the Planetary Society of putting the crew on one solid rocket and putting the cargo and the lander on another. I objected to Admiral Gaiman, the head of the accident board, and to Admiral Steidel on a conference call. I did not record it. I wish I had. I said to both of them, why are you penalizing mission planners of the future by not letting us have Ares 3, which we already have, that's what launches the shuttle, instead of 1 plus 5. 1 plus 5 makes 6. Isn't 2 plus 2, or isn't 3 plus 3 a little easier to come by? You got the same launch vehicle, you don't have to build two of them, and you don't have to find it, no matter what you do with Ares 1, it's underpowered, so you got to put the fuel in the lander. Man, that's not smart.
So they're pushing us away. So in general, is this going to really get us
okay,
closer
so
to
going
somewhere?
To the moon, as you begin to look at whether you are going to have a gap or not, you bet you're going to have a gap. Is going to the moon what you really want to do? You want to wait around till Ares 1 and Ares 5 are ready? No. Maybe you want to revise that so you get Norm Augustine together, and he begins to look at that. By that time, I've already made up my mind, because in 1985, I developed cycling orbits between Earth and Mars. Not invented here, okay?
Why is this better?
Because it frees up the finances so that we could eliminate the gap. I'm not sure. My son says stay out of the mud. There are too many vested interests. But do we want to, after 30 years of landing on a runway, do we want to come back to Mercury and land in the ocean?
We got
to
move. We got
to
move.
No. We want a runway lander.
Thank you.
Primary and back it up with a capsule. That we can get.
Find your spot.
Thank you, Buzz.
There's another parcel.
Taking a picture of you.
That was Buzz Aldrin.
And and those views of Buzz Aldrin, the second man to walk on the moon. You can see some of my pictures of Buzz Aldrin, Neil Tyson, and other attendees at President Obama's American Space Programs for the 21st Century conference on the Space Show's pages on the Southern FM website. Point your internet web browser at www.southernfm.com/space and then follow the link to my Florida diary. This Space Show special was researched, written and presented by Andrew Rennie. On our next show, the topic will be expanding our reach into the solar system. We will hear the views of Ed Crawley, who helped draft the new space policy, and John Grunsfeld, former Hubble Space Telescope repair astronaut and now director of the Space Telescope Science Institute.